Ken Kratz, the prosecutor in the Stephen Avery case, is going to join us here for a few minutes. And first of all, Ken, thank you for joining us on WOSH.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Got to get your reaction, first of all. Making of a Murderer. You knew this was coming out. It was going to be on Netflix, no doubt. But the backlash, the interest, has it caught you by surprise?
It has. The story obviously is compelling. Nobody knows better than your listeners in that area. Northeast Wisconsin had a front row seat to this entire drama as it played out between 2005 and 2007. I suspect that your listeners also are aware that this piece that was produced by Netflix and the two film students from New York is really not a documentary at all. It's a defense advocacy piece. It tells one side of the story. By the way, it's incredibly well done. It is aesthetically very, very well done with terrific editing and the like. However, to call it a documentary, I believe is irresponsible. They've taken no attempt to tell not only both sides of the story, but to put into the piece those pieces of evidence that are obviously inconsistent with any kind of planting or conspiracy defense. You obviously remember the defense of planting and the conspiracy being brought up at the trial. The difference, however, was at the trial I was able to meet those defenses with evidence that was not included in the documentary. So what it leaves the viewers with is a one-sided view, hand-picked or what I call cherry-picked facts that support their narrative. But again, although entertaining, it shouldn't at all be confused with what actually happened in the trial.
I'm going to ask you about their interest in talking with you. Did they approach you at all? Did they give you any inkling that they were trying to tell a balanced story here? Or did you see through what they were trying to do long ago?
Well, the first thing you need to know is that they made no bones about it. This was not a documentary when they first started. In fact, they completed their movie. It was a short film that was presented to the Columbia Film Festival, I believe, in 2012. Sometime in February of 2013, when they couldn't sell an advocacy piece, they approached Netflix. Netflix told them, if you're going to call it a documentary, you got to get both sides of the story. And it wasn't until February then of 2012 that they asked for my involvement. I agreed to be interviewed for the piece, but I said, I'd like to see your finished product. You've shown it to thousands of people. There's this movie that you've completed that I assume shows your slant, your agenda, what it is that you're alleging, since the defense has seen it, since the defense actually participated in making it. I'd just like the same opportunity that they had. The filmmakers refused. They said, we're not going to show you our movie. We're not going to show you our finished product, again, despite the fact that thousands of people had already seen it. They wanted to do a cold interview, and so it was pretty clear I was being, I guess, set up would be...
I would say you smell a setup with that.
Yeah, but here's the deal. I mean, they definitely deserved to interview me and to have a shot at me. What they didn't deserve, though, was to include a sound bite from me and then somehow represent that the state or the other side was participating in or involved in the creation of this piece. That wasn't true at all. We were going to be, again, edited or somehow used to further their agenda. I wasn't going to put up with that. I wasn't going to subject the victim's family to that kind of treatment. And so to say that they invited my participation, I suppose, from a technical standpoint is true, but not in any real or any legitimate way.
Ken Kratz, the former prosecutor for Manitowoc County, joining us here on News Talk Radio 1490 WOSH. I don't think I had that right. Were you, in fact, the Calumet County DA at the time?
Sure. I was the Calumet County DA for 18 years from 1992 through 2010.
My apologies there. I want to get your reaction to this new attorney that has been brought on. On Friday, we had the news break that a new attorney has taken the Avery case and says there's, quote, new evidence that will require a new trial. What are your feelings there?
Well, if there's new evidence, that would be news to me. They're certainly going to try to encourage some court to to reopen this, whether it is based on what a juror might have said or perhaps some other look at the evidence. Here's what they can't do. They can't take a pre-existing evidence that the defense had already had, that they already looked at, and whether they decided to further those defenses or not. They can't just recycle or kind of regurgitate those defenses and then pretend that it's new evidence. I'll tell you what, if there was new evidence that suggested that Stephen Avery was not guilty of committing these crimes, we would have heard about it by now.
Ken Kranz along with us. I want to get to an article here from Time magazine in regards to what is left out of the making of a murderer. I'm sure you've seen this. It's online. It's also available elsewhere. But there was additional DNA evidence pointing to Avery that's not brought up in the making of a murderer, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure. There's non-blood DNA that's important because it was found under the hood latch of the victim's vehicle. You know, the defense included officers somehow having this vial of blood and sprinkling it around the SUV and other areas of the crime scene. Of course, that was discounted or dispelled by the FBI, but there was no claim that they had a vial of sweat. And so the non-blood DNA found on the hood latch is so significant because it is not only inconsistent with planting. You got to stick your hand not just underneath the hood, but really inside of the hood. You have to have access to both the inside and the outside of the vehicle in which to have that evidence. It's not the kind of evidence that can be planted. The defense knows that. The defense piece, the documentary, if we'll call it that, did not include that, although it was a centerpiece, one of the centerpieces of my rebuttal argument, showing the jury why this whole planting theory is absolute nonsense. And as I mentioned before, although I had that opportunity at the time of the trial, I sure wish I would have been given the opportunity to present all of the evidence that's been missing. You know, the piece, although being very well done, cries out for a response. I've tried to do that. It appears that from a law enforcement and prosecution side, I seem to be the voice for this, which is a little unusual. I'm a defense attorney, so that making me the voice for the state is interesting. But the Halbach family, who I represented throughout this case, who I made sure her killers were brought to justice, I feel a sense of obligation, responsibility to go out there and make sure that the people know that this is not a fair representation, even if nobody else is willing to do that.
We only have a few more minutes with Ken Kranz, the prosecutor in the Avery Brandon Dassey case. That gets me on to Brandon Dassey, because friends who have watched this say he is a sympathetic character, not very bright, apparently not really sure what he did. There were, quote, inconsistencies in the story. He doesn't even understand what inconsistencies mean, nor does his mother. Being stupid is not a defense.
Well, it's not. Otherwise, we'd be out of work.
Yeah, and on top of that, the way he was treated by, you know this well, that when you're interviewing somebody in this situation, you have to press hard to get the truth.
Yeah, this wasn't a tea party. Remember, this woman was alleged to have been raped and tied up and murdered and mutilated. So the officers, their primary responsibility was getting to the bottom of this. You know, the documentary is allowed, I think, without anybody really challenging them to pick and choose parts of this interview and suggesting that it was leading. And I understand that the parts that they picked look suspect. You know what? I'd come to the same angry conclusion that most of the viewers come to. But when you watch the entire 3.5 hours that the jury got to see, Brandon Dassey provides details that are incredibly attached to not only the physical evidence, but can only be things that somebody who was involved in this process knew. I've got a lot of sympathy for Brandon Dassey, especially because he never would have murdered this girl. He never would have raped this girl, but for the insistence of his uncle. And so we gave him an opportunity to enter a plea to have a far less consequence than what he faced. Unfortunately, his family and others told him, go to trial. We don't want to be, you know, helping the prosecution against your uncle, Stephen Avery. And so it was really bad advice. And of course, now he's spending at least the rest of his life, or the most of the rest of his life, in prison. I think that's a tragedy. I think that Brendan Dassey, although involved, was certainly not a main character. But we don't get to pick our defendants. He was making decisions that placed himself there, that that made him party to the crime of not only murder, but sexual assault and mutilation of a body. And I think the jury came to the absolute right conclusion.
Ken, I got about 30 seconds remaining here. The other charge that came up last week was a swapping of votes by the jury, some horse trading going on. I'll convict on this if you give me that. We have no knowledge of that at all. It's one juror, apparently, who, quote, talked with the producers of a movie. They're trying to get as many eyes on as they can.
Right. Well, absolutely, and I don't fault them for doing that. But what they don't tell you is that other jurors who are willing to be identified now have come forward and said that's absolute nonsense. We based our decision on the evidence. There was no trading of votes. There was no compromise verdict. Stephen Avery is exactly where he needs to be.
Comes back to what a news director told me many years ago in television when I worked in television, Bob. Don't let the facts stand in the way of a good story.
And that's one of my quotes. We don't want a perfectly good conspiracy theory to be muddled up by what actually happened.
Exactly. Ken Kratz, I appreciate you taking time out for me this morning. Thank you again,
sir. Nice to talk to you again.
You bet.
Thanks. Bye-bye.